This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio.
And now, Ellery Queen, master detective and your host for the next half hour.
Thank you, Ernest Chappell, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Well, I think tonight's mystery will keep you guessing. It's about a strange chain of anonymous letters. I call it The Adventure of the Mischief Maker.
Hubert. Hubert.
Yes, my dear?
Put that newspaper down and finish your breakfast.
Hmm? Oh, yes, yes, of course, dear. Bloat was jolly good this morning. My dear, for an American, you really perform miracles with a bloater.
For an American... Hubert Lester, you've been in this country long enough to stop being so patronizing.
Now, pet, I wasn't being anything of the sort.
I suppose I ought to get down on my knees to you because you deigned to marry an American girl.
Oh, I wouldn't put it that way.
You married 4 months. Already you're reading newspapers at my breakfast table.
But, darling, I was merely looking up the situation in tea. When Sir Eustace sent me here from London to take charge of the New York branch of Spofford Tea Limited, he said to me... Lester, old chap,
you looking up the situation in tea, were you?
Mm-hmm.
You were looking up that movie star's photo, that's what. That hussy with the legs.
My love, I just happened to glance at it in passing.
Seems to me you just happened to glance at an awful lot of females, Hubert, since we've been married.
Oh, what utter nonsense, my dear. And even if I wanted to, which is rot, of course, you know I couldn't risk the scandal, my dear. I'd be given the sack, you know. Sir Eustace won't brook the least breath of scandal.
What about you and your secretary?
Me and my secretary? That spindle shanked weather-beaten antique, my dear. Now, really,
well,
sweet.
Well, maybe I'm wrong. Eat your bloater, dear.
Of course, darling. Oh, by the way, what was that letter that arrived in the morning post for you?
This letter? That's Mrs. Hubert Lester, 230 Hatton Avenue, New York City. Well, whoever wrote it certainly ought to fix his typewriter. Broken letters, out of line, some all smudgy.
Well, who's it from, pet?
See. Mrs. Lester. Your husband, Hubert, is... I knew it.
Huh?
I knew it. Hubert just proves it.
Proves it? Proves what?
You snake. You worm. You...
I need to see, but... Here, let me see that. Your husband is in love with his secretary. He's leading a double life, signed a friend. But I mean
friend
to say that...
Friend, Jack. Weatherby.
But, my love, you don't put credence in gossip. You don't even sign their name. I scarcely know what my secretary looks like.
Oh, I'll bet.
Now, darling, I give you my sacred word.
Sacred word. Out of my way, you Judas.
But, pet, where are you going?
I'm going to Reno. Two-time a respectable American girl, will you? Well, Hubert Lester, I'll get a divorce from you so fast that precious Sir Eustace of yours will think his New York representative was tarred, feathered, and boiled in oil.
Now, Mr. Plunkett, to meet my son, the secretary, Nicky Porter.
How do you do?
Mr. Plunkett came here to headquarters yesterday morning, Ellery. He's back this morning for a report.
A report on what, Dad?
My son's a sucker for screwy cases, Mr. Plunkett. Tell him.
Well, Mr. Queen, it's sure a Lulu. Here, read this letter that come yesterday morning.
Read it, Nicky, aloud.
Goodness, what a bad machine this was typed on. Broken letters, dirty, out of line.
Never mind the typing, Miss Porter. Just read it.
It's addressed to the president of the West Side Bank, 315 Hatton Avenue, New York. It says, Dear Sir, the rent collector for your bank, Ethan A. Plunkett, is a thief. He is stealing rent money on properties the bank owns.
Signed, a friend.
You're the Ethan A. Plunkett this anonymous letter refers to?
That's me, Mr. Queen.
Well, I'm sure the president of the bank you work for doesn't believe this charge, Mr. Plunkett.
He don't, Miss Porter, seeing he's me.
Who's you?
Mr. Plunkett's only been posing as the realty representative of the West Side Bank, Nicky. Secretly, Mr. Plunkett's the president. Owns the bank, lock, stock, and barrel, and all its properties. Protective coloration, Mr. Queen. I got a slew of hungry relatives. If they knew I owned a bank, they'd make a pauper of me in no time.
But, Ellery, if Mr. Plunkett owns the bank, how could he be stealing rent money from the bank?
Obviously, the writer of this letter didn't know Mr. Plunkett owns the bank. Just tried to get him into trouble. Some crank.
That isn't our son. Billy.
Yeah, Inspector?
Come in here. You see, one of the properties Mr. Plunkett owns is a five-family brownstone in the West Side.
I live there myself, Mr. Queen.
Oh, Billy.
Yeah, Inspector.
Tell Ellery what you found out at Mr. Plunkett's house.
Oh, that cockeyed kiss. You see, Maestro, the inspector sent me over to 230 Hatton Avenue yesterday to see if anybody else living there got one of these letters signed A. Friend.
Someone else got one, Sergeant?
Yep. One of Mr. Plunkett's tenants and neighbors there is people named Lester. Mrs. Lester's hitched to this Hubert Lester, a British who's been in this country around 6 months. The playboy type. I mean, he liked to be.
I know. A friend wrote Mrs. Lester that hubby's being untrue to her.
On the nose, Nicky. So Mrs. Lester packed up, and now she's heading for Reno.
My family have. Mr. Plunkett, who are the other tenants at 230 Hatton Avenue?
Well, there's Miss Bertha Lamb, an old maid.
And a bachelor named Hodge, Lewis Hodge.
And a family named Drayton, husband, wife, and 15-year-old daughter. Drayton's a psychiatrist.
Mr. Plunkett, Mr. and Mrs. Hubert Lester, Miss Bertha Lamb, spinster, Mr. Lewis Hodge, bachelor, and Dr. Drayton and family. I've got it all down, Ellen.
Fine, Nicky. Mr. Plunkett, does anyone in the house bear a grudge against you and the Lesters?
Mighty funny you ask that, Mr. Queen. My janitor there, Joe's a big sorehead. Pretty tough egg, Joe. Born on Hester Street in New York here. He'd have been a gangster, I guess, if he'd had more brains.
What's Joe sore about, Mr. Plunkett?
Well, seems like Joe didn't get Christmas presents enough from most of the tenants, including me. It slipped my mind.
So Joe sends anonymous letters?
It's hardly a laughing matter, Nicky. One of these letters has already separated a husband and wife.
Yes. Anonymous letters have done a lot of mischief in this world. They've even caused death.
Dad, I think we'll look into this. We'll begin by asking Dr. Drayton, Miss Lamb, and Mr. Hodge if they've received letters from the mischief maker who signs himself a friend. And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the beginning of our mystery. We'll be back in just a moment to tell you more, but first, Ernest Chappell.
Oh, for the life of a fireman. Bells clanging, men sliding down poles, fire trucks racing through traffic. Nothing but thrills and excitement. Oh, but that's not the way Mr. Thomas Byrne of Elmhurst, Long Island tells it. He writes,
we're called out on the average of twice every day. Some of the fires don't amount to much, but when we get in on a real blaze, then I've got to be quick on the trigger, ready for anything. Besides working under a nervous strain, there are the discomforts of going through heavy smoke and fumes, and getting drenched by water from the hoses. Sometimes, after a session like that, I've got a pounding headache. My stomach feels upset and my nerves are on edge. But I can count on Bromo Seltzer to help me feel better fast. A great many of us down at the firehouse keep a bottle of Bromo Seltzer in our lockers all the time.
And that's a mighty good idea for everybody. So, friends, tomorrow, get a bottle of Bromo Seltzer for your medicine chest. Then the next time you're suffering from a common sick headache, you'll know where to go for quick, effective relief. And now back to our story an hour later. The Queens, Nicky, and Sergeant Beely are standing before an apartment door at 230 Hatton Avenue, New York City. Inspector Queen has rung the bell marked B.V. Drayton, M.D. Suddenly.
Yes?
Dr. Drayton?
Yes?
May we see you a moment privately?
All four of you? Well, I'm pretty busy.
Police.
Oh, come in. And sit down, please.
Thank you, Doctor.
Now, what's the matter?
Dr. Drayton, we're investigating a slight case of anonymous letter writers.
Anonymous
Two people living in this house got anonymous letters yesterday morning.
Did you receive such a letter, Dr. Drayton?
Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm. Let's see it, Doctor.
Very well. Here.
Same broken type, out of line, smudgy.
Typed on the same machine as the other two.
Dr. Drayton, your 15-year-old daughter Sissy is in serious danger. Take a tip from a friend. Dr. Drayton, why didn't you report this to the police?
Your own daughter in danger.
Nonsense. My wife was frightened, too, but as a psychiatrist, I'm quite familiar with anonymous letter writing.
Really, Doctor? You mean it's a psychopathic manifestation?
Very often. We call it anonymous graphomania. It's a form of hysteria, not a crime or a prank, but an illness. The writer of this letter is probably a neurotic, maladjusted, emotionally unstable individual whom it would be criminal to prosecute. Well, I've handled lots of them.
Very interesting, Dr. Drayton. Haven't you found that anonymous letter writers are often of a certain type, age, and sex?
Well, yes?
What type, Ellie?
I'm sure Dr. Drayton's more competent to explain.
If it's a case of true anonymous graphomania, why, the writer is often an adolescent.
Of which sex, Doctor?
I... female. Neurotic, adolescent, female.
Why is it that every time something bad happens, men blame women? I'll bet just as many nasty boys
Nicky,
might...
Doctor, we'll keep this letter, if we may.
I'd prefer... Yes, of course.
Good day, Dr. Drayton.
Good day.
Thanks, Doc.
Good day.
Say, you know what I think?
Not yet, Sergeant. So that's letter number three. Dad, let's call Miss Bertha Lamb, spinster, and see if she's got number four. Miss Lamb.
Don't want any.
Here, madam, keep that door open. We're from police headquarters.
I bought a ticket to the policeman's ball.
We're not selling anything, Miss Lamb.
You let us come into your apartment for a few minutes, madam.
I will not. How do I know you're a policeman? What's this painted girl doing with you? Painted girl? Why not?
Sergeant, show Miss Lamb your shield.
Here. If you want to see the inspector's, his is gold. Satisfied?
Well, come in. What do you want?
Have you received an anonymous letter, Miss Lamb?
Anonymous letter? I should say not.
Three of your neighbors have received such letters, Miss Lamb.
Well, considering my neighbors, I'm not surprised. You take the Lesters, that Englishman, and his vulgar American wife. She's a nasty woman. And as for her husband, you just let me catch Mr. Hubert Lester making eyes at me.
At you, Miss Lamb?
Well, you better not. I have the blood of American pioneers in my veins.
What about Mr. Plunkett?
That awful yank rent collector lives in one of the apartments, so you'd think he'd see to it my bathroom plumbing stick. But not Ethan Plunkett. Why, from the way he won't spend their money, you think he owned the bank.
Yeah, wouldn't you?
And Dr. Drayton and his family, Miss Lamb.
Oh, horrible people. Mrs. Drayton's an absolute pill. Comes from the Midwest somewhere. Always knocking New York. And Dr. Drayton, they're both in the same hometown. Why, he ought to be rolling pills back where he come from. And nosy? I don't know how many times he's asked me about my dreams.
I could tell him your dreams, Lammy Pie.
Very painted
girl.
Miss Lamb,
and that 15-year-old daughter of theirs, sister. Ever I saw a goon in my life, that child is one. Absolutely weird. Very homely. Wears thick glasses, stays home all the time, reading nasty books. I tell you, that girl gives me the shivers.
Well, you
know,
give her.
And
Miss Lamb.
The only person in this entire house fit to be a decent person's neighbor is that grand Mr. Hodge. So nice. A bachelor, you know. Keeps to himself, poor man. So shy.
Thanks.
You know, I've often wondered why...
Well, thanks, Miss Lamb. We've got to be going.
But let me tell you about Mr. Hodge. He never throws wild parties.
Let's go for Pete's sake.
The perfect gentleman, so I know that he would...
So Miss Bertha Lamb didn't get a letter.
Interesting. Let's see if her dear Mr. Hart did.
Ring Hodge's bell again, Ellery.
Right, Dad.
Ellery, where'd you send Sergeant Veeley?
Downstairs to fetch Joe the janitor.
Where is this Hodge, anyway?
Not home. We'll have to come back later, Dad.
And I tell you, you ain't gonna. Give me that.
Clark, don't get tough, Joe. Hey, folks, look what I found.
Billy, what are you doing with that typewriter?
Whose is it? Where'd you find it, Sergeant?
In a trash bin in the basement when I went down to get this tough mug janitor. I almost passed it up as a piece of junk.
Certainly an old baby, Ellery. Think that's the typewriter?
No doubt about it, Nicky. This is a machine used to type those anonymous letters. Yes,
you, Joe.
Characters, out of line.
How did typewriter come to be in your basement, Miss House?
And who are you, Grandpa?
Oh, wise guy. Ellie!
Huh? I don't know. I never seen it before.
Did you, Joe? Joe, did you receive an anonymous letter yesterday morning?
What's that?
A letter with no name, just signed a friend.
I don't get no letter. I'm just the janitor.
Just smart enough to play dumb.
Joe,
yeah?
How'd you make out this Christmas?
I'll bet you got oodles of presents from people in the house.
Presents? No, they're all tightwads. That Bertha Lamb dame, she gave me $2, but not another dime from nobody else. Be a good janitor. Work like a horse. Comes Christmas time, nothing. I got a good mind up to collect that garbage.
Yes, we heard you were pleased, Joe. Really? Send this typewriter downtown to be fired. Let's go to some restaurant around here where we can have some lunch and talk this pesky case over.
Oh, here's Sergeant Veeley back.
Phone headquarters, Sergeant.
What's your report, Veeley?
That's like Ellery figured, Inspector. The boys didn't dig up a single other letter signed A. Friend anywhere else in the neighborhood.
Only the tenants at 230 Hatton Avenue got anonymous letters. Well, son, with the typewriter found in the basement of the house where the writer tried to dispose of it, the basement being accessible only to the tenants...
Yes, Dad, it means the letter writer is one of the tenants of 230 Hatton Avenue.
Think that somebody go to all that trouble just maliciously to make mischief.
Well, how do we know? Maybe he's only making it look like crank stuff.
To hide some other motive? Could be, really. Well, say, there's Mr. Plunkett just walking in.
Mr. Plunkett.
Oh. Hi, folks.
Hi.
Just come in for some lunch. My bank's just on the next block, you know. Well, find out who's writing those letters, Inspector.
We're still working on it, Mr. Plunkett.
We haven't even been able to see all your tenants at 230 Hatton Avenue. Lewis Hodge didn't answer our ring. What do you know about Hodge, Mr. Plunkett?
Nice fella, Mr. Queen. Quiet, minds his own business. I wish all my tenants was like that fella Hodge.
I wonder if he got one of those letters.
Hodge? Of course he did.
You didn't?
He did?
Oh, that's all.
Didn't I mention it? Thought it did. Must be getting old.
How do you know Hodge got one of the letters, Mr. Plunkett?
Because I saw it in his letter box yesterday morning with my own eyes, Inspector. Couldn't mistake that typewriting. Same's on the envelope I got.
Then, of course, you don't know what it said, Mr. Plunkett. What's Lewis Hodge do for a living?
Nothing right now. Fact is, he's behind in his rent. Only last week I said to him, Mr. Hodge, I ain't a man to kick a fellow when he's down.
Good Lord.
Hurry, what'd you jump up for?
What's the matter, son?
Hodge out of work, behind his rent, facing eviction, received one of those mischief-making letters yesterday morning. Come on, Mr. Plunkett. We've got to get into Hodge's apartment at once.
Mr. Hodge still doesn't answer.
Better unlock his door, Mr. Plunkett.
But I didn't tell him nothing about evicting him. Had to jog him up, didn't I? On it. Can't seem to...
Sergeant, unlock the door. Take the key from Mr. Plunkett.
Sure.
Nicky, you and Mr. Plunkett better stay out in the hall till we take a look.
Here we are.
We'll be right out here.
Living room.
Empty. That letter on the table.
Looks like one of the same crop.
It is. Packed on that old wreck of a machine.
To Lewis Hodge, this address. Mr. Hodge, the cops are watching you. You can't get away. Signed, a friend.
Some friend. Where is Hodge, anyway?
That door over there. Must be his bedroom. It's locked.
We better force it there.
On one side, gents. Again? There he is.
On the bed.
Dead. For at least 24 hours, I'd say.
Shot through the left temple.
Gun still in his hand.
Windows and doors locked from the inside.
So it can't be anything but suicide. That blasted letter drove Hodge to suicide.
Yes. Last our friend, the mischief maker, has caused a death.
Henry.
What's up, Dad?
It's taken us 2 days, but we finally identified Lewis Hodge.
Identified him? Well, who was he?
An escaped convict serving a life sentence for murder. Born in Cincinnati and was doing his stretching in an Ohio pen when he managed to make a break. He's been holding up in New York.
Yeah, his real name was James Lewis Hodgkiss.
Escaped convict. No wonder Mr. Hodge was such a model tenant.
Yes, he must have been at the end of his rope. Broke, afraid he might be recognized and sent back to prison. Hodgkiss undoubtedly lived in constant fear. That anonymous letter saying the police were watching him broke his nerve and took the easy way out.
How did the letter writer know who he was?
We'll probably never know, Nicky. May have recognized him from having seen his photo somewhere. Or it might have been a complete shot in the dark.
Anyway, we're back where we started from. Who sent the letter that drove Hodge to suicide? Who wrote to Mrs. Lester and broke up her marriage? Who wrote Dr. Drayton that his 15-year-old daughter was in danger? Who wrote to old man Plunkett trying to get him in trouble with the bank?
A friend, Sergeant. I think it's hopeless.
Dad, have you got those letters on file here?
Yes, sir. Here.
The envelope, too, Dad. Thanks.
What are you looking them over again for, son?
You've examined them all before, Ellen.
Oh, I ought to have my eyes examined.
What do you mean?
What?
Here it was all this time, and I didn't see it.
Didn't see what, Maestro?
Look at these four envelopes. Don't you see there's one thing all four addresses have in common?
There. What thing, sir?
A clue. A clue in the addresses. The same clue.
In the addresses? Well, the one to Mr. Plunkett's address to the bank. The ones to Mrs. Lester, Dr. Drayton, and Lewis Hodge are addressed to the apartment house. The addresses are all correct, Ellen.
Wait. There's one erasure on each envelope.
Right, Dad. And in the same place in each case.
Fire. Say, that's right.
Some typewriter character. One character has been erased just after the house number on each envelope.
Between the house number and the name of the street.
Wonder what was erased. Can't make it out, son. Can you?
No, Dad, but I know what was erased just the same.
You do?
Yes, and that tells me the identity of the mischief maker who wrote these anonymous letters. And now, let's solve our mystery. Miss Bean, who wrote the anonymous letter?
I think Dr. Drayton. And why do you think? Well, because he hesitated so much in answering the questions and he didn't report his letter to the police force as the others did.
Thank you, Miss Bean. Now, Mr. Cusack, who do you think wrote the anonymous letter?
I think it was Dr. Drayton's daughter, Mr. Queen, who was described by Mr. Lamb as being very weird.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think that?
Well, Miss Lamb said that she stayed home all the time, reading strange books. And I think she probably found access to her father's scientific books, and that her imagination started to work.
Thank you, Mr. Cusack and Miss B. You'll find in just a moment whether you've solved our mystery correctly. And now, Ernest Chappell.
Friends, for United States Cadet Nurse Corps information, right, in care of Fox 88, New York City. Now, if you can qualify, you'll do your country a great service and build yourself a future through the United States Cadet Nurse Corps. And don't forget the March of Dimes. Send your dimes and dollars now to help fight infantile paralysis.
Four anonymous letters all came the same morning. They must all have been typed at the same time. We also know that in addressing the four envelopes, the writer typed a single character of some sort between the house number and the name of the street. And that in all four cases, before mailing the letters, he erased that character. Now, what were those typewriter characters he put in and then took out? Were they different characters in each case?
I'd say it was the same character in each case, because at least three of the four addresses were identical. The erasure occurs in exactly the same spot on the four envelopes.
Right, Dad. So it was the same character.
So what character was it, Elf?
Let's figure it out together. What are the possibilities? Well, the erased character could have been a numeral.
Like 1, 2, or 3.
Yes, or it could have been a letter of the alphabet.
Like A, B, or X.
Right, or it could have been a special mark.
A dollar sign or a percent sign.
Or any of the other special keys on a typewriter. Or finally, it could have been a punctuation mark. Now, the erasure in each case occurred just after the house number. Could the character have been a numeral?
That would mean that the writer originally typed the wrong house number, Ellery. One with four numbers instead of three, like 2305 instead of 230.
Exactly, Nicky. How could the writer have typed the wrong house number? You know, he was someone in 230 Hatton Avenue. He certainly knew his own address. So the erased character wasn't a numeral. Was it a letter of the alphabet?
Might have been. The erasures are between the house number and the name of the street, so they could have been a wrong letter to start the name of the street.
Don't be a fool, Davey. Huh? If he knew his house number, then he knew the name of the street, too. Better.
Dad's right, Sergeant. So the erased character wasn't a letter of the alphabet, either.
Well, it certainly couldn't have been a dollar sign or a mark like that.
No, Nicky. A special mark in that particular spot, an address, would make no sense at all.
Okay, so the character erased must have been a punctuation mark. The same punctuation mark. But which punctuation mark?
Well, Dad, do we use punctuation marks after the street number in an address?
We? Who's we?
We, the people. We, Americans.
Americans? Certainly not.
You mean there's countries where they do?
Yes, Sergeant. In certain foreign countries, it's accepted practice to put a comma after the street number. 230 Hatton Avenue, citizens of those countries would write, 230, comma, Hatton Avenue. So I knew the erased characters must have been common. They've been erased after typing them in. The writer realized they betrayed his foreign origin. Question. Who at 230 Hatton Avenue is not an American? Mr. Plunkett, a Yank. The Braytons, Midwestern. Mr. Lamb, of American pioneers. Lewis Hodge, or Hodgkin, born in Cincinnati, Ohio. Joe the Janitor, born in Hester Street, New York City. Mrs. Lester, an American. Hubert Lester, her husband.
An Englishman.
Right, Nicky. Hubert Lester, in this country only 6 months. Not long enough to have broken himself with his English punctuation habit. So I knew it was Hubert Lester who wrote that letter to his wife, accusing himself of being untrue to her.
But why, Michael?
Well, Sergeant, obviously Lester decided he'd made a serious error in marrying Mrs. Lester. This was his devious way of getting her to divorce him.
instead of giving her the actual grounds, which might have caused a scandal and the loss of his job.
Then why did Lester send those letters to the other people in the house?
Obviously there to divert suspicion from himself, to make the writer seem to be someone of a diseased or disturbed mind, a chronic and indiscriminate mischief maker. I imagine Lester had in mind putting the blame on Dr. Drayton's unhappy, neurotic 15-year-old daughter, type often responsible for anonymous letters. Yes, Lester is a mischief maker in this case, Dad. I'm sure you can dig up some charge to make him pay for it.
Good evening. This is Crime Classics. I am Thomas Highland with another true story of crime. Listen. The sound of Baltimore, Maryland in the good old summertime. The great claw of steamed crabs between the nutcracker. And the wonderful beer. Hot summer night, August 14th, 1953. And the room on Utah Place. And one of Baltimore's favorite summer indoor sports. Chesapeake crabs and the golden brew in the frosted glass. With 2/5 of bourbon on the side and piquant conversation.
Mickey. Uh-huh. Did you read where it says next year the Orioles going to be in the American League?
Just talk. Don't you believe it.
Mickey?
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever commit murder?
Before tonight?
Uh-huh.
No. Never before tonight.
Can we have this party someplace else?
Don't worry. You got nothing to worry about. Just don't look at her.
Tonight, with names changed to avoid any embarrassment of the principals who may still be alive, my report to you on The Death of a Baltimore Birdie and Friend.
Crime Classics, a series of true crime stories taken from the records and newspapers of every land, from every time. Your host each week, Mr. Thomas Highland, connoisseur of crime, student of violence, and teller of murders. Now once again, Mr. Thomas Highland.
I was in Baltimore last autumn when the Peabody Bookshop was still selling the dustiest books and the best beer in the world. It was a pleasant evening, cool enough for a small fire in the fireplace, and the hum of talk had just the right amount of laughter in it, and one of the patrons had brought along his violin, and so the hours spun away. So it was after midnight when my friend led me past the red brick building on Mount Royal Terrace and told me that a couple of murderers had lived here. And the next morning, passed the house on Utah Place where they had done their murder. Busybody as I am about such things, I had to find out all about it. And I did. And I learned that it started when two young men were walking from Hyattsville to Baltimore.
And they got an arena in a place called Collins Park, I hear. Maybe I could get a fight there.
Joe Anderson, a very bad middleweight, plumping into an even worse light heavy.
They hear what happened to you in Washington, they won't even let you walk down the aisles.
Non-admiring friend Mickey Thayer. Lately, since they met at a Salvation Army center in Scranton, Joe Anderson's handler manager.
What's the matter? You like to get your brains beat out, Joe?
All of a sudden you're worried about me, huh?
Uh-uh. Just interested in you as a type, that's all. You like to get your brains beat out?
That I am, Mickey. I'm very slow and real stupid. You want to see if I can break in here?
How about him?
Huh?
The fellow walking towards us on the other side of the road.
What about him?
Another type, Joe. Pipe smoker and dog walker.
You know what they call those dogs? Chihuahuas. Lots of yap, no more biting a flea. The fella now wore tweed coat and leather elbows, pork pie hat, and special walking shoes. Money.
And we don't have any.
I'm hungry.
We don't have any money, Joe.
I bet he has.
Bet I'm hungrier than you.
And us with no dough.
Go get some.
Sure. Hey, mister. You got a match, mister? How did I do, Mickey?
Let's see the wallet.
Well, how'd I do?
Just $8 worth. Not real good, Joe. Not very good at all.
A few hours later, a Mr. James Henderson of Hyattsville, Maryland, picked himself up out of a ditch and wondered what he was doing there. As a matter of fact, he didn't even know he was Mr. James Henderson, and the fact that he had no wallet didn't help matters. He was led home by a small chihuahua, and it was only last April that he recovered his memory. But the $8 served to assuage the hunger of the two hoodlums, one of whom, the next night, appeared as a contestant in a special event at Carlin's Park.
Now, stay away from him, Joe. He looks awfully tough.
I'll kill him.
Yeah, how are you going to get in back of him with a lead pipe in front of all these people? Go on, get out there.
One of the shortest fights on record at Carlin's Park, the home of notoriously short fights, but long roller coasters. Mickey ran to the center of the ring and assisted Joe to his corner. And 3 hours later, when they were walking around Druid Hill Park Lake, Mickey was still supporting him.
That fellow knocked me out is going to be a champ.
Yeah, Joe.
Take my word for it.
Joe.
Yeah?
The fellow you fought tonight is 46 years old. First fight he's won since he was...
Mickey.
What?
Stop.
Yeah.
Lady in the convertible. Lady needs help.
Yeah, she does. You need help, lady?
Oh, I stopped here to look at the lake and I can't get started.
Move over. I said move over.
Well, I...
I'm going to fix it so your car's going to work, so you move over.
All right.
Well.
Well, I forgot to turn on my key, didn't I?
You sure did. Lady?
It was stupid of me,
Lady...
Yes?
I can tell you're not stupid. You don't have a stupid face. You don't do stupid things for no reason at all. Did you just stall the car when you saw us coming?
What are you talking about?
Joe.
Huh?
Get in the other side. This is Joe.
Hi.
Get out of this car, both of you.
And leave you alone? Oh, that'd be dangerous, girl like you. Pretty girl like you?
Well, thank you, sir.
Let us drive you home.
Why, thank you, sir.
Where do you live?
Utah Place. Not far from here.
You tell us how to get there.
Sure. Oh, I never met anybody like you, Mickey. I never, really. Alice? Oh. Alice? Is that you? Well, why didn't you answer me? Oh, I'm sorry, Miss Wilkinson, but who are these men? Well, this is Mickey, and this is Joe. This is Miss Wilkinson, my employer.
Oh, good evening, Mrs. Wilkinson.
Alice, you should know better. Making noise at this hour of the night.
Oh, it was our fault.
Yes, ma'am, it was.
When I gave you the night off, Alice, and the use of the car...
You want me to quit? I'll quit. I can get a job as companion any time I want. I can get any kind of...
Oh, Alice, it's just that the neighbors... Myself, I don't mind.
Mrs. Wilkinson?
Yes?
Why don't you get in the car, and we'll all go get a sandwich or something?
Yeah, a drive-in.
Oh... Well...
Sure, Miss Wilkinson.
I don't know.
Oh, come on. Joe, get out and let Mrs. Wilkinson in.
You mind if I sit in back with you, Mrs. Wilkinson?
Oh, no. Not at all.
Hi. Hi, Mrs. Wilkinson.
Hello.
I'm a prize fighter.
Well, isn't that interesting? Oh, Alice?
Yes, Miss Wilkinson?
Joe here. Did you know he was a prize fighter?
And they drove through Druid Hill Park. The ladies pointing out the famed Mansion House, the zoo, and further east, the campus of Johns Hopkins University. All in all, it was quite a cultural ride. They found no drive-in that was open, but did find a liquor store that was. On the drive back through Druid Hill Park, they searched for druids, and finding none, greeted daybreak from the famed hummock where the defending Baltimoreans broke and ran in 1812. Greeted daybreak, and there is something friendly in that.
Alice?
Yes, Miss Wilkinson?
Don't call me Mrs. Wilkinson. Call me Birdie. That's my first name, and I want everybody here to call me Birdie.
You said it, Birdie.
Everybody.
Hi, Birdie.
Birdie, you're a doll. A real live doll.
I like you too much to argue with you.
That was the latter part of May, and in the middle part of June.
Alice.
Yeah, honey?
Nice how we met and all, and how we took to each other and all.
Uh-huh. You wanna know what bothers me, honey?
What?
Miss Wilkinson.
Birdie.
Yeah, Birdie and Joe. She's such a prim woman and all, and Joe's a real bum. He's a real bum, isn't he, Mickey?
Yeah.
Well, I just don't figure it.
Come here. Now, don't say a word. Baby.
Yeah, Mickey.
Shh. Now don't answer. Mm-hmm. Don't say a word until I ask you a question. Mm-hmm. My, you look cute smiling up at me like that. You pretty girl. Where's her safe, Alice?
Mickey.
You work for her, you know. Where does Birdie keep her safe?
If I didn't know you were kidding, I'd throw you right out of here.
I'm kidding.
And on July 4th...
Wow-wee! That was a beaut.
Joe.
Yeah, buddy?
You like me, don't you?
You're a living doll.
I mean, you enjoy yourself with me, don't you? We have good times together, don't we? Like sitting on the grass and watching the fireworks. It's just like we're young together, isn't it?
Wow-wee! Stars! How about that? Stars! Look, look!
Yes, I'm looking, Joe.
Yeah?
You're very nice. You're very, very nice.
Hey, Mickey, wake up.
Mm-hmm. Huh?
Hey, you know what?
Huh?
Birdie, she's crazy about me.
Mm.
You hear what I said?
Yeah, I heard you. Sit down, Joe. I want to talk to you. Alice told me she's got 50 grand in her safe.
Birdie?
And jewels.
Birdie?
I think she ought to give us some of that, Joe.
Well, she said if I married her...
What for?
Well, she said if I married...
It'd be easier if you didn't, Joe. Now, just step up and ask her for some of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
Now, suppose she says no.
Well, not to me, she won't.
Well, just suppose.
I don't know.
I'll be there. I'll tell you what to do.
Okay.
And Joe slept the sleep of the innocents. Not Mickey. He paced. Sweltering night. Walked over to Joe's bed, wiped Joe's brow, smiled upon him. Good weapon, Joe. Dependable. Something to watch over and take care of.
Get your rest, Joe. Sleep.
You are listening to Crime Classics and your host, Thomas Highland. CBS Radio brings you the great news reporters of the CBS Radio Newsroom. Edward R. Murrow, Lowell Thomas, Robert Trout, and a long list of familiar names for news. And remember, Every weeknight, CBS Radio broadcasts a complete, up-to-the-minute summary of the Army-McCarthy hearings. Throughout the hearings, tune in CBS Radio for complete evening coverage of each day's significant events. Now, once again, Thomas Highland and the second act of Crime Classics and his report to you on the death of a Baltimore birdie and friend. A few more words about my last trip to Baltimore. There stands out the walk through the old cemetery below Easterwood Park, where the headstones are remarkable for verses like this one. Young man, as you pass by, as you are now, so once was I. As I am now, so you will be. Prepare for death and follow me. Baltimore is filled with such tidbits. Charming city of marble stoops and Goucher College and beautiful women and crab cakes and waterfront. It's interesting to note that more Baltimoreans change their names per capita than any major city in the world. And I want to tell you, too, what the house on Utah Place looked like, not far from the Francis Scott Key Monument. It was of three stories, granite construction, and a maple tree grew up from the curb. Its facade was neo-Baltimore Rococo, a style somehow found nowhere else. Its interior suited the character of Birdie, a 45-year-old Baltimore widow.
China closet, Dresden figurines, grand piano. So many things I own, Alice, and I don't own love. Birdie. Carved canopied bed, Italian chest, a John Sargent portrait, and I don't own love. Birdie. Yes, my dear?
Is it true?
Is what true?
All that money you told me you have in the safe.
Oh, $50,000? Oh, yes, for an emergency. It was a thing that my husband...
Well, I don't understand. I don't understand it at all.
Well, now, what do you mean?
Well, all that money just lying around.
Oh, my husband used to say to me, suppose I get killed or something, Birdie. Our estate may be tied up in litigation, and what would you do for money? So we'll keep this amount of cash in the safe,
Birdie.
And then... What? What's the matter?
Well, suppose you got hurt. Suppose, for example, you went to New York and you got sick or got hurt. You couldn't get to your emergency money at all. And suppose the banks were closed, holiday or something.
Oh, I should give you the combination of the safe, shouldn't I?
Well, if you think I've worked for you long enough, then you trust me.
Of course I do.
Just in case you got hurt or something and couldn't get to the bank, you know.
I'll write it down for you. Now, remind me to write it down for you.
All right.
You know, Alice?
Yes?
I'm worried.
Oh?
Well, I'm getting forgetful.
Forgetful?
Yes, I'm misplacing things. My little pearl bracelet and the other day a $50 bill I put down. Now, I thought I'd put it down on my dressing table. And you remember that cameo brooch? Oh, you remember my cameo brooch.
Well, have you looked everywhere?
And some other things, too.
Birdie, you know what?
What?
I think Joe likes you.
He's such a child.
He likes you a lot.
Well, children aren't very discriminating, Alice. And as I said, Joe is just a child.
You'd be surprised.
What do you mean?
I've heard him talk about you. Not childlike at all.
Oh, tell me what he said. Oh, tell me.
Believe me, it wasn't childlike. Here, Mickey, this watch. She won't miss it. She's got three or four more.
Oh, you're a little thief, Alice. I love you.
Marry me. You know, I was thinking, Mickey, I might be able to get us $50,000 for a wedding present. Oh, marry me, Mickey.
But Mickey would always get roguish when the subject came up. And somehow he had a trick of making her forget her immediate plans of wanting to get married. Stalled her, as it's known in the trade. And relieve her of whatever bauble she had filched and pawn it and go... Havies with Joe. And one day, the two fellows had a heart-to-heart talk.
She's got a safe, and she's got 50 grand in it.
And probably who knows what else she's got in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that evening, another heart-to-heart situation.
The way you hold me so tight, Joe. So strong. So strong.
Yeah. Birdie. You first, Birdie.
Well, I was just going to tell you something, Joe, about me. I'm a new woman since I met you. It seems like things I only dreamed about before, I find myself doing because of you, Joe. Because, well, you're not complicated. You're not caught up in the welter of being a civilized human being. And I find myself spinning when I'm near you. Joe, anything I have is yours, Joe.
How about the 50,000 bucks in the safe?
Oh, I see.
How about...
No.
Well, you just said...
A thing a woman always says when she's spinning. Not to be taken literally, Joe.
You mean...
I mean I'm not going to give you any money.
You mean you just lied through your teeth?
Get out of here.
Come to Joey, come on.
Joey, don't. Don't.
Come on.
Get out. When you can say, forgive me, come back. But now, get out. Go. Please.
Mickey, please marry me. Oh, Mickey, please.
Mickey, I know the combination of the safe. She wrote it down for me. I have it. I have it. I have it.
Will you marry me, Alice? Please marry me.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Mickey.
Good. I'll bring Joe. We'll have a party. Tonight, I'll bring some steamed crabs and beer. You got the beer, huh?
The four of us will have a party.
Alice, Joe, and you and me.
We'll have a party.
Oh, I mean it. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. Oh, shh, please, we've got to be quiet. Now we've just got to... Oh, I told you. Hello? Oh, I'm sorry, Mrs. Garvey. We're just cracking some crabs and having some beer. Oh, yes. Yes, I know about your husband. And I do hope he's feeling better, and it was very inconsiderate of us to have made so much noise, and we won't anymore. I promise you. Oh, now you see, that was Mrs. Garvey again. Now that's the third time. She said she'd call the police if we're not more quiet.
No, no.
So please, let's all of us keep having a good time. But let's... Now, I mean you too, Joey. Joey. Joe. Joe.
Leave him alone. Leave him alone for a minute.
Joe.
I'm okay. I'm okay. Is she dead? Did I kill her?
Yeah, yeah. Alice?
Yeah, come here. The safe's right in here. Right in back of that desk. Hurry up, Mickey, hurry.
Just keep quiet, that's all.
Wow-wee. Look, Mick, look. Look at all that.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, Alice. Hey, Alice, say something.
Let's just get out of here, please. Please, please.
Joe...
Please, okay. Please.
Sorry, Alice. Mickey?
Yeah? Mm-hmm.
Explain to me again. I forget.
What?
Well, it dawned on me again, and I forget your answer. I could have married Brady. Real nice dame. Everybody's dead. Oh.
Nah, don't worry about it. All this dough. Let's get back to the party.
Mickey.
Uh-huh?
Did you read where it says next year the Orioles going to be in the American League?
It's just talk. Don't you believe it.
Mickey.
Mm-hmm?
Did you ever commit murder?
Before tonight?
Uh-huh.
No, never before tonight.
Can't we have this party someplace else?
Don't worry. You got nothing to worry about. Just don't look at her.
Okay. Wow-wee.
Mm. All that dough, huh?
Wow-wee.
Hey, that must be Mrs. So-and-so from next door. Always telling us to keep quiet.
Shut up, Mrs. So-and-so!
Go shut her up, Joe.
Now you shut up, Mrs. So-and-so! Oh. Mickey.
Yeah?
It ain't Mrs. So-and-so.
No, it wasn't Mrs. Garvey at all. It was Officer Ned Gleel, badge 715, Baltimore Police Department, come to quiet down the neighborhood at Mrs. Garvey's request. Walking through the house then, Officer Gleel quickly determined that Bertie and Alice would no more disturb the peace. And neither, for that matter, would Joe or Mickey. Ever. In just a moment, Thomas Highland will tell you about next week's crime classic. Baltimore Birdie, tonight's crime classic, was adapted from the original court reports and newspaper accounts by Morton Fine and David Friedkin. The music was composed and conducted by Bernard Herrmann, and the program is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. Thomas Highland is portrayed on radio by Lou Merrill. In tonight's story, Paula Winslow was heard as Bertie, Ted DeCorsia as Joe, Jerry Hausner as Mickey, and Mary Jane Croft as Alice. Bob Lamond speaking. And here again is Thomas Highland. Next week, that portion of the Ottoman Empire known to us as Albania. There used to be a fellow there who killed everyone who got in his way. Friends, passers-by, uncles, aunts, brothers, brother-in-law, sister, even Mom. It's listed in my files as Ali Pasha, a Turkish delight. Thank you. Good night. Tomorrow night, The Fork of the Road is a warm, human, dramatic document telling the story of a marriage from the humorous viewpoint of a mother looking backwards over the years. Kathy and Elliot Lewis, on stage, are the principal performers in this delightful original play. CBS Radio is happy to present Kathy and Elliot Lewis, on stage, over most of these stations, at their new Thursday night time. Don't miss them tomorrow evening. Everybody Loves Junior Miss, Thursday nights on the CBS Radio Network.
That's the show for this week, but don't forget there are thousands more like it at RelicRadio.com. Horror, strange tales, science fiction, crime, all available for free. If you'd like to donate to Relic Radio and help keep it all free, you can do that through the website as well. Visit donate.relicradio.com to find out more and to see the special downloadable sets that are available. My thanks to those who have donated, and thanks for listening today. Talk to you again next week.